Hello, I'm Chris Payne, Managing Director and Market Leader for Protiviti's Kansas City office. Like Molly, I'm an active member of the Kansas City FEI chapter and benefit from the rich content the chapter delivers to its members. I'm excited to hear Dan share how his finance organization is navigating our current environment and preparing for the future. And I would also love to hear any predictions he has for the 2020 season. Too often, finance organizations have a reputation of being reactive and focused on the past, in essence, playing defense. What would it mean then for finance to be proactive and to go on the offense? On the field, the Chiefs have built one of the most prolific offenses in professional football. And Dan will talk about taking a similar approach to building an offense within a finance organization. I'm proud to introduce this session, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Molly Gardner, Director of Permanent Placement with Robert Half in our Kansas City office. Welcome to FEI's final forward-thinking session, Going on Offense, featuring Dan Crum, CFO of our world champion, Kansas City Chiefs. Robert Half and Protiviti are pleased to be longstanding supporters of FEI and sponsors of the Forward Thinking series. I'm also a member of the Kansas City FEI chapter and work closely with chapter members to deliver relevant programming and resources at a local level. Forward Thinking is an innovative series that gives you a front row seat to discussions with leading financial executives across a variety of industries. Today's discussion with Dan will be a good one.
Hi, this is Chris Westfall, and this is the Financial Executive Podcast.
Welcome, everyone. Happy Friday to everyone. It's a great day to have this conversation with Dan Crum. Before we get started and I do the intro, I want to thank Robert Half and Protiviti for supporting FEI and sponsoring this episode of Forward Thinking. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Dan Crum, the Chief Financial Officer of the Kansas City Chiefs, who started in September 2010. Prior to joining the Chiefs, Dan was with the New Orleans Hornets, now Pelicans of the NBA, as Senior Vice President and CFO as well. And before that, he was CFO of Abita Spring Water Company, and he began his professional career at KPMG. Dan, welcome. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Andre. It's a pleasure to be here with everyone.
All right. Well, Dan, before we get started, first off, I mean, we're going through a lot as a society with COVID and the pandemic. How are you? How's your family coping with everything? I hope everyone's all right. Tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you, Andre. So everybody here is doing fine. Family's healthy, and fortunately, family back home is healthy as well. Kids have had to go to school online. They're both in college up here at the University of Kansas and University of Missouri, Kansas City. So they had to do their college classes online this semester and spring semester as well. But we're all doing well. And obviously, it's a big adjustment working from home. Back in March, mid-March, we were packing up and leaving the office. We were asked, well, how long do you think we'll really be 2 weeks? Do you think it'll be more? And I said, I think it'll be two. And then here we are almost 5 months later. We're still working from home. So, but it's something that we've taken very seriously, and we've taken a very cautious approach to it. And, you know, fortunately, we've been able to work very smoothly remotely. But overall things have been going well. We're blessed on our side.
That's great. That's great to hear. You're part of a bigger family, the Hunt family, with the Kansas City Chiefs and with the leadership of Clark Hunt as chairman and CEO. Tell us a little bit about how that family dynamic you know, working in that organization is, and give us a sense of the scope of the business of an NFL franchise. You know, there's a lot of pieces to it, from player engagement, media and production, stadium operations, corporate partnerships. Give us a sense of how that all comes together as a business.
Sure. So I'll start by saying that, working for the Hunt family and with Clark and the leadership team of the Chiefs is truly a blessing. And I'm just very blessed to be able to work with such great individuals. And, you know, that family is really true. We feel like a family at the Chiefs. Yeah, we're treated like a family business. And there are a lot of pieces there. But I think when you think of the Hunt family, and when I was first interviewed for the job, and when I was first questioned as to whether or not I would want to interview for the job back in 2010, when it first became open, one of the things I thought about, I did my research, I looked, and I said, this is just an organization that is really second to none. When you think about the history of the Hunt family and Lamar Hunt and all the innovations that he was responsible for in professional sports, in football, founding the AFL, the American Football League, founding Major League Soccer, World Championship Tennis. He's been involved in so many things, and the Hunt family has just made so many contributions to the professional sports landscape. And, you know, when we think about that, we also think about in the community. They've made just so, you know, through the Hunt Family Foundation, they've made tremendous amounts of impact in the community here in Kansas City and the greater Kansas City region, and what we refer to as Chiefs Kingdom, you know, which is our fans and in the multi-state area up here. But when we think about, you know, getting back to the Hunt family and some of their professional sports innovations, the term Super Bowl came from Lamar Hunt, you know, from his family. His children were playing with what was called a Super Ball, which was made by Whammo back in the day. They were kids and they're bouncing the ball around, and the term Super Bowl came from that. Also, you know, Lamar was one of the first to, you know, paint the end zones on the fields and put the team logos and colors in the end zones. So he was really a forward thinker and just had a lot of great ideas, but it all came back to, with him, it all came back to what's best for the fans. What do the fans want would make the fan experience the best?
Right. That's wonderful. I know we're have to take some polling questions, so I would invite Michelle to kind of put that out there right now for everyone.
Great. Did you plan to attend a live sports event in 2020? Please be sure to make your selections and press submit. Don't forget to send any questions you have to the Q&A box, as they'll be addressed throughout the presentation. I'm going to give you about 15 seconds left to respond, and we'll move to the results. And here are our results.
Okay. Let's see. I can't see the results, but all right. All right, let's a question for you. So you were also, Dan, the CFO of the Hornets in the NBA. How's that compare and contrast to the NFL? A little bit from a business perspective. Is it similar? Is it different? Different league and all that stuff?
Yeah, so great question. So to your previous question, how big of an enterprise is this and the different departments? And football and basketball are very similar in a lot of respects. You're sort of divided into, it's like two businesses within one, where you have football side, coaches, players, general manager, football staff, operations and admin, and then you have the business side where you have all the finance, HR, marketing, sales, IT, all of those pieces. And similar in basketball, the one really big difference that I found between the two was the game day experience in basketball was much different than football, because basketball, it's an evening sport primarily. Most of the games are prime time. Shorter window, not as much tailgating. Whereas football, it's one day a week. It's a very focused event. It becomes tailgating. It becomes all the prep and everything building up to it. And it becomes an entire day for some people, you know, for our fans. You know, we noticed that at Arrowhead Stadium, we park roughly 20,000 cars, and we have, you know, a tremendous tailgating culture. Which my walk to the stadium from our office and practice facility is great, because you get all the smells of the barbecue and everybody having fun. And but you know, as far as the business side of it, the accounting, we have a lot of similarities. In the NBA, we had to do, you know, pretty much the same types of audits for the collective bargaining agreement. Financial statements that all rolled into one from each team into one league level statement. In basketball, it was called combined financial statements. In the NFL, it's called conforming statements, because you basically conform your GAAP financials into one normalized format that the league reports on. But a lot of the systems, we use a lot of the same accounting systems and sponsorship systems and data systems. You know, we see a lot of similarities in both. I think the real big differences are just, it's a different sport. The game day experience is quite different amongst the two.
Right. Okay. I want to go back to the response for the polling question for will you attend a live sporting event in 2020? And, you know, almost 57% said no to that. So when you look at from a business operations perspective and the season, you know, supposed to be kicking off soon and all that, how do you address, you know, that type of issue as it relates to, you know, the pandemic and things like that from a business planning, forecasting perspective and so on?
Sure. So that's a great question. We've had to basically plan. We started this back before the pandemic. We started with a normal season scenario. We budgeted, cash forecasted under, you know, normal season, full stadium. And then we pivoted and we built a scenario that was based on no fans in the stadium. And then we built the model and the format's flexible enough to where we could flex to if that became a percentage or a reduced capacity. So we have a number of plans in place, and we had been planning throughout this process to be prepared for any of those scenarios, because we've seen it with, if you look at the college level, you've seen some conferences have actually canceled all sports, and then you've seen some conferences have gone to a conference-only football season, and some conferences have delayed the start of the season. So those are all things that impact your cash flow, and you have to be prepared for that. So what does that mean? Does that mean that I have to, some clubs, some colleges, they may have to defer CapEx. They may have significant capital projects that have to be deferred to a future period. They may have revolving credit facilities that they have to have in place, or may have to put some in place to be prepared to smooth out some of those cash dips and fluctuations.
Right. So that's the unknown side of it. And then the known side of it with, you know, Patrick Mahomes and his 10-year, $500 million contract. Tell us a little bit about how something like that comes together. How do you, you know, plan for that? How do you budget? How do you, you know, cash flow forecast around things like that? Give us a little inside football on how something like that comes together.
Sure. So our normal process, how we budget and cash forecast when it comes to player salaries, is we typically budget or forecast to the salary cap number. And sometimes it may fluctuate. We may go a little bit different, because sometimes you may be able to roll over some, if you had some excess cap space, you can roll that forward. Excuse me. So it may fluctuate from year to year, but basically as a sort of a benchmark, you can, we always know we can budget towards a salary cap. So what happens when you get a deal like this that comes together, there's discussions, and when it starts to move in that direction that we know, okay, something is going to happen, then we start to get terms, we start to know, well, how much is the contract worth? What's the length of the contract? When are the payments due? What type of payments are there? Because if it's a signing bonus, that signing bonus for GAAP purposes can be amortized over a certain period of time. If it's a roster bonus, it's expensed in that period. So that impacts us as far as, well, how does it look compared to our budget? And then from a cash flow perspective, if there's a payment due when we didn't have that payment scheduled, then we have to look at, does that create an issue for us as far as a cash flow issue? And so there's a lot of, we've got to get all those terms and we've got to work with them and make sure that from a cash perspective and budget perspective, we've got it all accounted for and we're prepared for it. And there's also other pieces too. We may be asked to analyze, should we procure an insurance policy for this player? So we have to get our data group in there and they have to start looking at, okay, for this player position, what has been the injury history over the last 3 to 5 years? How many games have been missed? What are the percentages there? And then we run it through a net present value model that tells us, based on the cost of this insurance policy, based on the injury history, it's either a negative net present value or a positive net present value for us to purchase a policy.
Yeah, well, that's great. We're getting a lot of great questions coming in. Here's one I want to share. I think it ties to this is, you know, how do you think about adjusting expenses now that, you know, there's going to be a hit to revenue from, you know, shortened season, no preseason and things like that? Give us a little sense of your thinking about how do you manage through something like that?
Yes. So when we were planning and looking at what could potentially happen this season, we went back to each department and we looked at, okay, staffing wise, okay, what does that mean for us? If we're at X percent capacity, how many staff do we really need for that? So to do this properly, we also look at our ticket forecast, our suite forecast. And so we know what is estimated on X percent capacity. What is the bucket of money that we have to spend, that we have to work with? And then we look at, we know that our player salaries are fixed. We know that those costs aren't going to change. But the costs that we can change, the expenses we can manage, we look at what is it that we need to do this properly. And we also looked at, you know, from CapEx perspective as well, what do we have the ability to push back and defer? And, you know, also looking at, you know, our operating expenses. If we budgeted under a normal scenario, we know that that's not the case now. So what is it that we really don't need to do right now or that we could push back and defer to another period? So it's being just really very prudent, looking at line by line and operationally getting with the department heads. We're in this situation and we've had a lot of planning. I mean, we take the, every week we have a meeting where we've got a large group that talks about stadium protocols and planning for the season under those scenarios. And so we know what we need to execute and that's what we really focus on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Excellent. A lot of questions coming in around COVID and managing to COVID. Can you give us a sense of the organization? How have operations altered for you? You know, not only the finance function, but organizationally now as you plan. I mean, we touched on what you just mentioned with regard to, you know, finances and expense reduction and things like that. But operationally, when we look at stadium operations with a shortened season, there are social distancing requirements, all those type of things. Walk us through the thinking and how the plans are for something like that.
Sure. So we had, you know, we start with, we get with our stadium operations group. We work with our stadium event services group as well, and other departments. We look at what do we need to safely manage this process, manage the building. You know, it's obviously meant the purchase of plexiglass, things like that, additional PPE, additional disinfecting and cleaning units. So we take as you've probably heard the term, a Swiss cheese approach, where there's multiple layers to our process and how we handle this. But it's a lot of planning. The league, the NFL, has a chief medical officer that works with the clubs. We also work with our local health department officials. So it's a very coordinated, combined effort amongst a number of different groups to make sure that we're doing what we need to do to execute. As far as how we've worked, so I'll start with when we first went to a remote work environment, basically we had to do like what we're doing right now. We substituted every in-person meeting, became a virtual meeting. So there was a lot of virtual communication meetings. We even conducted our audit virtually. So this hit right when we were starting our audit process, and we have a number of audits that we have to undergo each year for the league and different entities. And so we had to move that from auditors in the field to a completely virtual process. So as far as planning, you know, for game day, we've gone through, like I said, there's been a number of meetings and discussions with all of the right officials and at league level, city level, et cetera. So it's a lot of effort, a lot of work to pull that together. But I think when we also look at kind of going back to the April time frame, one of the biggest things that we were able to do as a league and an organization was have a virtual NFL draft. And I think, you know, for the first time, we got to get a peek inside of head coaches' homes and their families, and general managers' homes and their families and their pets, and et cetera. So that was something that our IT team basically had to replicate the draft room through Microsoft Teams, where we had coaches in one room, ownership, president, head coach, general manager, another team, medical, scouts, and all coordinating back and forth where they could jump out of one team into another and have a discussion. So it went off very well. We had 15 million viewers the first night of the draft, which was a record. And I think there's some things going from that draft that we look to duplicate as we move forward. We saw that when we had the schedule release. We did the same thing. We had time inside of head coaches' homes and GM's homes, and they talked about what the schedule meant to them, what they thought it meant. So so I think the virtualization was huge, and being able to work remotely. But I think right now, really just preparation for training camp, because we normally hold our training camp off-site. This year, the league mandated that we hold training camps within the practice facility so that we don't introduce another facility into the equation, and we keep it as confined and reduced as possible. So for us, that meant having to convert Arrowhead Stadium into a training camp, you know, where we use club level for meeting rooms and suites for meeting rooms and things like that, whereas we normally would have used a local university for those. But it's meant a lot of changes to us.
Interesting. That's like you created your own bubble, like the NBA is doing right now for it, but just for training camp, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So we have to just take another polling question. Michelle, if you want to ask the question.
Has your organization's operational budget been drastically changed by the COVID-19 crisis? Please be sure to make your selection and press submit right on the slide screen. Don't forget to submit any questions you have through the Q&A box. I'm going to give you about 10 seconds left to make your responses, and we'll move to the results. Here are results.
Okay. A lot of folks impacted, two-thirds. Operating budgets drastically changed, right, over COVID. Can you speak a little to that from your perspective, Dan? How is it affecting you? We touched on a lot of the changes and the unknown, but are you seeing any kind of long-term impact of this right now, or are you just in kind of preparing for crisis management now in the short term with the expectation for things changing down the road?
Right. So the primary focus has been for the short term, although we have planned for beyond that, but primarily focused on short term. You know, it's hard for us to tell. We don't know when things are going to change as far as the overall greater situation. So what we have to do is just know that we're prepared for this year. We're prepared and we'll do what we have to do. We've got a good plan in place, and we have, you know, financially we're prepared, operationally we're prepared. But we do look future. We look to a point when certain things will come back, and as this subsides, people will come back, and people will have, you know, those people that have the financial capacity to purchase and to go back to games and spend will. And we've looked at it as we always plan for the long term, and we know that at some point things will get back in balance. So we don't want to lose sight of making the moves and the things that are going to be good for the long term and the future of our club and our sport.
I mean, there's a lot of interplay that you have with the league itself, right? Give us a little sense of what that relationship is. You know, earlier you mentioned you share financial data with the league. How does that relationship, in that context, but also if the league cancels the season for some reason, if things are such, what's the organization's role and impact on that decision-making process? Is that an owner decision and so on? Give us a sense of that relationship with the league itself.
Right. Well, the league has, so you've got each club has an owner, and there are various committees such as the finance committee, international, digital, et cetera, that ownership is represented on. So typically these committees may have anywhere from six owners or around six owners or more. And they use the committees as a vetting source so that when they have a topic, for instance, if it was something around how do we do this, some of that information will go down to the committee level. They'll discuss it and bring it back to ownership. But these are things that the league is very coordinated with its ownership and through that committee structure. There's a lot of communication. There are owners meetings. There are various meetings. I know at the finance level, we have club finance calls, and we've had numerous calls. We had many more than we normally do because of the situation we're in, and they keep us posted on various things. We talk to the league CFO and their finance team, but those are decisions that are made with a number of different people in place, because you also have not only the team ownership, but you have, outside of that, you have the corporate partners of the league, and you have the broadcast and network partners of the league. So those decisions, and when it comes to the pandemic, all of those decisions are made in the respect of, number one, what is safe? What is the safest move? What is the decisions that are for the safety of our fans? And that's always the number one priority, especially in this situation, is safety is first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. I want to drill down a little bit into the finance organization within the Chiefs and everything. You have a data scientists on staff. Give us a sense of, data analytics is big now. How do you utilize that skill set in the finance function in the organization?
Sure. So we use it in a variety of ways. We use it on the football side, and we use it on the business side. So I'll start with the football side. We help out with the production of certain reports, and these reports take information from the league's system that records every play, every player, and so we can pull these reports. Every team has the ability to pull reports, and they can look at certain metrics that they want to get better information, or maybe see if there's a pattern that's developed that they need to be guarding against or trying to exploit. So the information, basically, they'll take that information and parse it into, here's reports that are easily digestible, that coaches and scouts and operations personnel, coordinators can all look at quickly and get the knowledge that they need to be able to game plan properly. That's just one example. There are many other examples on the football side. As I mentioned, one of the things when we look at whether to purchase an insurance policy on a player, we look at that injury history. We can pull those statistics, and we look at that injury history for that position for a certain period of time, by age, by position, all those things. And helps us to make a decision on when we're spending money, how do we do that. We also, on the business side, it's pulling a lot of the data on our customers. So we have a number of different systems that we have a loyalty club, so we can pull information on our fans through that. There are fan surveys that are conducted regularly, and we pull information on that. We can run word clouds and see what is fan sentiment about the Chiefs, because through that fan sentiment, we can see if there's a problem. If something keeps kind of bubbling up to the top, we know, okay, maybe this is something that we need to go dig into further, or we can see maybe there's something really positive. We do those kind of things. We also do fan intercept surveys, but we really look, our data scientists spend a lot of time on our fan data, and they also spend time on our financial data as well. We look at performance metrics, we benchmark, we look at how we're doing, and we run all the normal ratios and try to assess the financial health of the company. But overall, it's the data we get from our fans, and how are our campaigns doing? So when we run a Facebook ad or a promotion, we want to go back and see what is the success of that, and did we capture what we were looking for? Because we always want to be accountable and know that the things we're doing are working.
Yeah, that's interesting. A question from the audience is, which I kind of gets into the data science part, is like, what are your top three revenue sources? And I would expect that you would spend a lot of time and energy to understand how to maximize that. Can you talk about a little bit about your revenue streams within?
Yeah. So locally, what we call controllable or local revenue, that we set the pricing and we do the selling and the fulfillment and the management of, it's going to be your tickets, your corporate partnerships, your suites. Those are your largest revenue buckets. And so our data team works very closely with our ticket sales group to optimize pricing. So, we look at, what is the price elasticity of the market, and, what are the prices, where is that line that volume drops versus capturing price? So, one of the things that that's something we really look at, pricing data, and try to really try to optimize our pricing. And there's a lot of different things we do. We can compare our ticket prices into the market to see what are some of the other competing forms of entertainment charging. So there's a number of different things that we have our group working on as far as ticket pricing analysis. Same thing with corporate partnerships, trying to optimize the pricing structure, the deal structures. But it all starts with pulling, having the right data, pulling that data, and having it easily retrievable.
Right. Interesting. We're getting a lot of questions on you as an individual and, you know, background and history. So let me go there a little bit, because it also speaks to the, you know, how do you get into this business to work in kind of sports finance overall? So, and how do you start? How do you prepare for something like that? And I want to also touch on, I know that the organization has a, you know, robust internship program. You look to hire through that process. So give us a little sense of, you know, how you got into this and how does the organization, you know, do talent management for the finance function and in general overall?
Okay, so how I got into it, and I think what this speaks to is the importance of your network and maintaining your contacts. So I was the CFO at Abita Springs Water Company back in 2005, and Hurricane Katrina had hit New Orleans and destroyed our bottling plant. And so at that point, I was, you know, forced. We sold the ownership, decided to sell to a competitor. So we all started looking for jobs at that point. And I reached out to the person who was the managing partner at KPMG when I was there at that time. And so I just reached out to him and asked if he knew of anybody that was looking for a CFO. And he said, well, I'm actually the financial advisor for the owner of the New Orleans Hornets basketball team, and they're getting ready to relocate back from Oklahoma City to New Orleans. And so he asked me if I wanted to get an interview, and I said, yeah, absolutely, I'd love to. And so he arranged for it, met with the owner and the president, went through the process, and they made me an offer. And so I think the time that I spent in the NBA working for the Hornets was really what put me in a position to get this job in the NFL with the Chiefs, because at least I had that sports experience and background that I could go back to, and at least I, you know, check that box for sports experience. So I think that really played into it. And I think just really the fact that I still kept my network and contacts, you know, going after all those years. But speaking to how we hire, how we recruit, so we do have an internship program, and we have a lot of the different departments, finance, HR, IT, sales, marketing. We've had interns that have actually come to work for us and have worked themselves into full-time jobs with us, or if there wasn't an opportunity available, they some of them have gone on to other clubs and gotten full-time work there. So, you know, we're really pleased with our internship program and what that's produced for us. But yeah, I tell people, as far as how to get into the sports business, I've seen it a number of ways, but what I've seen as far as more prevalent in people in my role has been people that have worked for consulting firms, audit firms that had sports clients, and actually when an opening or an opportunity presented, they went to work for that club. So for instance, I have a friend who was an auditor for the club that that he's working for now. He spent 6 years auditing their financials, and when their CFO retired, he was asked to come on as CFO. And I have other friends that have done the same thing. So I do think that having that connection, whether it's consulting or auditing, and then there's also just building that network, so that when opportunities do come up, at least if you have somebody that you know who's in that business that maybe has worked with you or seen your work, that at least gives you another opportunity.
That's wonderful. And a public service announcement for the power of association and networking. Thank you for being part of FEI as well in that regard. I want to also touch on, you have the youngest GM in the NFL. So at 40 years old, you know, talk about that dynamic a little bit. You know, the generational interaction in the workforce with millennials coming up and being so, I mean, he's a little past in the millennial range, right? A little bit past that. But give us a sense of that interaction and what does that mean for the organization?
Yeah, so first I'll say Brett brings an incredible amount of energy and creativity to our organization. He has been involved in our biggest deals, the signing of Patrick Mahomes, the contract extension for Patrick, the signing of Chris Jones, the contract extension for Chris, signing Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark. He has been involved in some of the biggest deals in the club's history. And he brings just a lot of creativity. You know, he's somebody who came up in that data age, you know, so he understands data and he watches film and video on players, and he has a really creative way of working and structuring deals, and brings a lot of energy, and he gets along very, very well with everybody. He's extremely well liked in the organization, and he sets a great example for people too, because he, like our head coach, like Coach Reed, is that they're very hard workers, and that gives us inspiration. Yeah, I see what they do and the hours they put in, and that's inspirational to me, because, you know, I want to do my part. You know, I've always been that way, but I want to do my part, you know, because I see what they do.
Right, right. So if I take this a little further out to the player side of things, so the interaction with the players that you have and the complexity of the pandemic and everything, what does it look like if a player opts out of wanting to play because of health concerns or things like that? Is that possible? How do you manage something like that or plan for something like that and the financial impacts?
Right. So basically, players do have the ability to opt out and they can opt out for the season. There's a specific date that they can opt out by. If they opt out for a medical reason, they get a certain amount of pay for that year. And if it's a non-medical reason, they get a certain amount of pay. And they also keep a credited year of service towards their benefit plans and their careers. So what it means for us is certain individuals, we have to sign other players. We may have to go out. We had one player that did opt out, and we had to go sign another player, which means that, okay, we have to see what's the impact of that player, you know, from a contract perspective. You know, what is the contract term, the payments, when do they do? So it's all really kind of goes back to that being able to shift and having a good plan in place and being able to move something from this block to this square.
Right. Right. Okay. Great. I think it's time for another polling question. Michelle, you want to take that on?
Do you currently update your revenue projections more than once a month? Please be sure to make your selections and press submit in order for your answer to be recorded. Reminder, you do need to make your selections on the screen for them to be recorded. Don't forget to submit any questions you have through the Q&A box, as they will be addressed accordingly. I'm going to give you about 10 seconds left to respond, and we'll move to the results. And here are results.
Okay, so most do not update, you know, more than once a month. That's understandable. Let me, along those lines, you touched on fan sentiment and kind of understanding, you know, how they think, and you adjust operations accordingly. Have you seen a change around it? I would suspect that everyone's still on, you know, really excited and everything as, you know, winning the Super Bowl. But how is that impacted your pricing decisions for tickets and things like that that you see coming up for the upcoming season?
Yep. So, you know, fortunately, we've been, as far as being at a place or a time in our history, for something like this. We were really obviously coming off the Super Bowl win was tremendous for us because our fan sentiment was at its highest, and we really captured that. We through even though we were separated, we couldn't hold the events and we didn't have the access to players that we normally would have. We did manage to stay digitally connected to our fans, and through a variety of different media and different content, we really stayed connected with our fans. And we've seen that our fan sentiment has been strong, and they've been very supportive of us. And we can't be more pleased with the way our fans have reacted through this and stayed connected. And so, as far as preparing for the season and, with ticket sales, we had already gone out with our renewals. We actually went out right before the Super Bowl, that week before the Super Bowl. So we were in a really good position. A lot of other clubs had not even gone out with their renewals at that point, but we did it. So we capitalized on sort of striking while the iron was hot and being in a position to go out with our renewals. And most of our renewals came in very early. So we were in a really good position. And credit to our ticket sales and service group, but also to our team in general for a fantastic season and just creating the strong connection to our fans. And so we went out and in a good time, and we were in a good spot for when this happened.
With all this success of the Super Bowl and the sentiment being up, any considerations for a new stadium, different impact on the community in that regard? I mean, from the stadium's been around for a while, and any plans along those lines?
Sure. So Arrowhead Stadium is a beautiful building. It's an iconic building. It opened in 1972. So we'll be coming up on 50 years here in a couple of years. We still have a number of years left on our lease with the stadium, and in 2010 we went through a $400 million renovation, and we've been doing a number of renovations to it over the years. Like last year, we replaced all the seats in the upper bowl. This year, we replaced all the seats in the lower bowl. We've refurbed the scoreboards with the highest definition video. So we're constantly making improvements to the stadium and doing things. But our fans love Arrowhead Stadium. It's we're very proud that it's the loudest stadium in the world as certified by Guinness Book of World Records.
There you go.
At 142.2 decibels. So we're extremely proud of that. And our fans love it. They love the tailgating atmosphere. Like I said earlier, we park 20,000 cars approximately. And so Arrowhead is a part of the culture up here in Kansas City. And we respect that. And for now, we're going to continue to make improvements to the stadium and make our fan experience the best with it.
That's great. So, with a Super Bowl, what comes with that for the club financially? Is there, how does that impact the organization financially, a Super Bowl victory? Outside of the obvious, right, that more people are going to want to buy tickets and show up for and so on, give us a little sense of the financial impact of that and overall.
Right. So that's, you hit it on the head. There's sort of a trailing effect. So right away, you're going to have more fans buying tickets. You'll attract, at that point, there's more corporate, partnership capabilities, more opportunities there. There are payments that you receive for when you win the Super Bowl. But there's also, there are payments from the league that you receive, but there's also other expenses. There's the travel too. There's the, all the different elements and, what you're doing to take care of, your corporate partners during that period. And then, so there are expenses that go along with it, but financially it's a good thing. It really creates a future for the team because, winning that Super Bowl energizes your fans. It allows you to sell tickets, corporate partnership opportunities, television opportunities, all of those things, and so many ways that you can not only extend your brand and promote it, but those brands of your corporate partners that have been with you. We have some corporate partners that have been with us since day one. We have some of our original partners. And so it's a great reward for them that, you know, they've won the Super Bowl with us and now their brand gets amplified along with ours. So there's a bit of a trailing effect in the sales side, but overall it's a fantastic experience, and it's something that is you know, just, you can't put it into words the impact it has, not only on your club, but on your community and with your fans.
And the ring ceremony is coming up, I understand. You don't have the ring yet to show everyone, right?
Not yet, unfortunately, no. we're told it could be the end of August, so that's what we've been anxiously awaiting. But that is one expense of the Super Bowl, is the organization. But anything that is new or additional expense, you know, as a result of winning the Super Bowl throughout the halls, it's always followed by, that's a good problem to have.
Right, you know, right.
We're just glad we have that problem.
Yeah, exactly. There, you know, a question came in, an interesting one, a small market, you know, versus a large market franchise, from a financial standpoint, you know, is there parity for the most part, or do you have your unique challenges being in a smaller market than a New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and so on?
Right. So those larger markets, the New York, Chicago's, LA's, Boston's, they have access to, you know, more corporate partners because there's more corporations headquartered there than in smaller markets. Their population density is different. But overall, the league does a very good job of equalizing. So of every game, every home game, there is a certain percentage of the gate, you know, the ticket revenue from that game that you pay into the league. It goes into a pot and then it's redistributed equally amongst all 32 clubs. So there's a really good revenue sharing mechanism built in. All of the TV contracts are shared equally amongst all 32 clubs. And same with NFL Ventures, which is the marketing arm of the NFL. That's shared equally amongst the 32 clubs. So there are a lot of opportunities. And that's how you see, you know, smaller market teams like Kansas City, Green Bay, New Orleans winning Super Bowls, and not just New York, LA, you know, winning the Super Bowl. So I think the league does a really fine job of equalizing that through these different, you know, ways to share those revenues.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Well, we have to take one final polling question. So Michelle, do you want to take that over?
Do you think there will be a Super Bowl in 2021? Please be sure to make your selections and press submit. And any last questions you have, please submit them through the Q&A box now. We'll do our best to get to them. I'll give you about 10 seconds left to make your responses, and we'll move to the results.
I can bet every Kansas City fan is saying yes to this question right now, right? Not necessarily a Niner fan.
And here are our results.
Yes, 70%. All right. I can't imagine us not having a Super Bowl in whatever form it shows up, right? Even if it's an empty stadium and they just play the game for everyone. Is that a concern for you? You know, that this pandemic is going to influence it that way, or is it really important to be able to see it on television? I know you. There's a lot to be there with the energy and electricity of a live audience, but you know, is there concerns with the league that, you know, it's going to take something away from America's kind of, you know, from the football season and the excitement of it?
You know, I can't speak for the league, but I know in general the Super Bowl is such a huge experience. And, you know, actually being there is one thing, but it is viewed by over 100 million people around the world, and it's one of the largest televised events and, you know, single game events. And I think that fans are really, there's so many fans here because, for instance, Miami held 65,000 fans. Now, you would lose something by not having those fans in the stadium, just the energy. Even if you're watching, even if you're just watching on TV, you still lose that energy, that feel. But I'm hopeful that, you know, we're at least in a position, hopefully around Super Bowl time, that things have gotten better, not, you know, just for everybody in general, that that we're hopefully starting to get this pandemic in our rearview mirrors. But I know that no matter what, the league will find a way to create the energy and do a creative job of broadcasting so that you can feel the excitement and the energy. And I think we've seen that with some of the other leagues that have gone. They've really experimented and done a nice job with baseball, with basketball, of creating energy and excitement on the court and the field. And I know the NFL will do a great job if it comes to that. And hopefully it doesn't. I know they'll do a great job and create that, you know, energetic environment.
We all have our fingers crossed for that, for sure. So we have one final kind of question and comment before we wrap up is, you know, been through a lot with COVID, with the organization, the impact on players, on fans and stuff. What is the kind of one big lesson you want to leave everyone with in this whole experience for you?
Yeah, so I think really the takeaways, probably the biggest takeaways I have is be prepared. And I think having, you know, sound business continuity management plan in place and having a mindset around something's going to happen, whether it's a natural disaster. I don't think any of us foresaw that we were going to be in a pandemic, but having a mindset of something's going to happen that you need to be prepared for. It could be a fire to your facility. So really just being prepared, having good business continuity management plans, also having a really good, agile and innovative technology function in your environment, in your organization, was critical for us, because I remember as we were sitting there the 2 days before we actually left the office, I was sitting with our VP of administration, our head of IT, myself and our president, and our president asked us, are we ready? And we all undoubtedly said, we are ready to go. We can flip the switch right now. And we did 2 days later, and we've been working remote for 4.5 months. And so having, you know, credit to our technology group and our leader there, Kevin has done a fantastic job, and for having us in a place technology-wise that we were prepared. And then I would say the last thing is communication. Really, you cannot communicate enough with your staff, with your business associates. You cannot communicate enough, and it's really important just to keep that normal communication schedule, even though you're not in the same building. That means a lot. It helps out a lot.
Right. That's great. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for your time. I think we said it all, right? We covered a lot of ground here today. I appreciate you taking the time to join us. I want to again thank our sponsors, Robert Half and Protivity, for support, forward thinking. To everyone who attended, thank you for being there. There's CPE credit available for everyone. So, Dan, thank you very much. Good luck in the coming season. Hope to see you in February again. Let's get excited about this. So, thanks again for everything.
Thank you, Andre. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Take care, everyone. Thanks for being with us today.